Welcome back to the program. Thanks for joining us once again. A lot to talk about today. Bruce Pearl and college basketball, NCAA tournament, college football, what's happening in the college football world, some NFL rule changes and lockout discussion, Major League Baseball opening day right around the corner, and even a little glance at NASCAR coming up this weekend, the AutoCare 400. But first, let's talk about the NBA. Last night, I sat down and watch some of the Knicks Magic game, and I've got a few things to talk about from that game and from things that are going on in the NBA, but I don't know if you've watched the Knicks since they've acquired Carmelo Anthony. You know, everyone talked about him like he was going to be the answer to their problem, and I've heard other people say this, but he's not the answer. He might be part of the solution, but he's not the answer. First and foremost, he doesn't play any defense whatsoever. You can't have a team. Look, when he was with the Nuggets, they would score 150 points a night, but they didn't go to the championship because they couldn't play any defense. Same problem there in New York. If he's not going to play any defense and they're not getting defense from Amari Stoudemire and the rest of their team, you can't just outscore everybody every night. Play a team like Miami that can play offense, that's going to have guys that can shoot from all over the place. Play a team like Boston this year who has pretty decent ability to score, and they can shut you down. I'm not sure what they thought they were going to get when they got Carmelo. He looks like he's put on weight. He looks slower than he has in the past. He's not. I think that he thinks in his mind he's the best player in the NBA, hands down, and that's just not the case. That's not the case. We'll come back to that about who is the best player. There were times when the ball would get tipped away and someone would just go to make a layup where he could have easily made an attempt to at least swat at the ball, go after the ball, maybe foul, do something. Nothing. Nothing from Carmelo, nothing from the Knicks. They looked like they didn't have any fight. I was hopeful. I thought they looked good right away when they first got him, and it just looks like things are going downhill. And unless they can acquire somebody that's going to boost and bolster their defense, I don't think that they're as talented as they think they may be. Yes, they have two good parts in Amari Stoudemire and Carmelo Anthony, but those two parts aren't what you need in order to make a run in the playoffs. When you talk about who is the best player in the NBA, well, hands down, you've got guys who, like LeBron, like Kobe, who are great, great ball players. But they haven't had MVP-type seasons, and the backlash after LeBron's decision, he won't be the MVP this year. Now, the media would tell you Derrick Rose is hands down the MVP this season. My question is, why have they decided this so abruptly? Have the Bulls absolutely turned it around? Absolutely. They went from a 41-win season last year to looking at potentially 55 to 60 wins this year. Tom Thibodeau has done a great job leading the Bulls and turning that program around, or that team around. But look at who he's got around him. Look at who other people have. Most people have second in the conversation LeBron James. You know, he's put up decent numbers, but not what you'd come to expect from LeBron James. Then you hear Dwight Howard. Well, look at who Dwight Howard has around him. You've got Hedo Turkoglu, who is not who he once was. You've got Jameer Nelson, who's not a true point guard. He's a shooting point guard, which can be a good thing. If the Magic can learn to play with it, that will benefit. They will benefit. But after they dealt Marcin Gortat and got rid of Vince Carter, they've left themselves with a young base. And yes, J.J. Redick, okay, he's their best player off the bench. Brandon Bass. Ryan Anderson, I'm not sure. He basically, Dwight Howard has no supporting cast around him. If you take Dwight Howard away from the Magic, you're looking at a 30-win team, not a 55-60-win team. You take Derrick Rose away from the Bulls, are they a 60-win team? No. Are they better than a 30-win team? Possibly. No, both of those guys are very crucial to their team. But you take Dwight Howard away, the Magic have nothing. And the other thing is, why are the Magic paying so much money for Gilbert Arenas to come off the bench and play 5 minutes a game? $1.5 million a month. And he plays 5 minutes a night, 2 to 3 times a week. Sign me up for that job. Next time you need somebody to come off the bench and run that role, I would be happy to do it because he does not make any points. He doesn't play that great. Why would you get rid of Rashard Lewis, who at least put a few points on the board for a guy who doesn't start for you and can't play for you well to begin with? Just some of these things just don't really make a whole lot of sense to me. And everybody that wants to just hop all up on loving the Bulls about how they're the best team in the East. Yes, their record says they're the best team in the East. But are they really going to be the best? They're still young. Are they going to be able to do the same, the things that they want to do in the playoffs and the postseason? Probably not. You know what? Most of those guys haven't been there and done that like the Celtics have. Like, if it doesn't happen for the Celtics this year, it's not going to happen again. They're on their way out. And I'm worried about how a veteran team like that, their bodies will hold up in the long run. The Celtics, their dominance ends. The Heat, I think, are still. You know, I didn't think this earlier, but the more I watch, the more I think the Heat may be the team to beat out of the East. The Bulls play good defense, and they've got a chance to compete against them. I don't know. It's going to be tough to see. It's going to be tough to say. We'll see what happens. It'll be interesting. But going on to college basketball, let me ask you this question. Bruce Pearl fired from Tennessee. If you follow sports, you know what he's been involved in, how many different NCAA issues. Would you want him as the head coach of your school? I know one thing, I wouldn't want him as a coach of my school. Now, granted, my school, you know, we have a little bit higher expectation for integrity and that sort of thing, and he is absolutely the antithesis of that. However, where does he get a chance at? Shouldn't be at a big name school. I wouldn't take the chance on him because he's just going to run you into the ground if he does the same thing he did at Tennessee. Don't get me wrong, he has great passion and enthusiasm, and he's a good coach. I mean, I could see a team that needs. I don't know. Would you want him at your school? We'd love to hear from you and find out your thoughts. How's your brackets looking? We've got several good teams. Three of the number ones are still in it. I took Duke over Pitt in the championship game, so my bracket's kind of wrecked. However, I still have my other Final Four teams still in the tournament. We'll see as the games play out tonight and the next few nights how it all shapes up. It's kind of some surprises. We'll see how BYU and San Diego State, Butler, some of these smaller schools, if they can compete against the Dukes and North Carolinas, the Ohio States, Kansases. It'll be interesting to see how they do. Some of these games are, don't miss these games. BYU Florida should be an exciting game tonight. Florida has big time school athleticism with small time school experience. That meaning that the smaller schools are typically the guys that stay for 3 or 4 years. If you go to a big school, they're the one and dones, two and dones. They've got the experience and some athleticism. Do I think that they can compete with Duke? No, I've got Duke winning the whole thing, especially with Kyrie Irving being back. He's dangerous. Nolan Smith, when they start to click again, it's gonna be dangerous. But should be interesting to see how it plays out. I think Ohio State. I don't see them making it to the Final Four, but we'll see. We'll see how it all plays out. So you also have, if you look in the other realms of college sports, college football. You know, we talked about the Jim Tressel thing last time. Jim Tressel, one of those high integrity guys, somebody that you expect a lot out of him. You expect that, you know, he's been the poster child for Ohio State. He can kind of do what he wants, and apparently he's done just that. Now he's come out and said that he wants to sit 5 games just like the rest of his players. Second question is that really good enough? Maybe for the suspension wise, but if you look at what happens to other people for what they've done, and it's not what you do. If you do something wrong and you come out and say, "Hey, I did something wrong," NCAA, They're okay. Take your lumps. Here it is. A couple game suspension. Maybe you sit out one or two games. But it's the cover up and it's the lying that will get you. For instance, Dez Bryant. A couple years ago, he had a lunch with Deion Sanders. NCAA wanted to know about it. He lied about it. Turns out the lunch, there's nothing wrong with the lunch. He did nothing illegal. But he lied about it. The NCAA came down and brought the hammer. They suspended him for the whole year. Done. Now, I have to feel, this is how I feel, that the NCAA plays some favorites. Dez Bryant at Oklahoma State, not a big-time team. Yes, they travel okay, but they don't travel like Ohio State. You have guys that are involved in this. Dez Bryant goes and gets lunch. Doesn't do anything wrong, but lies about it, gets a year. You have five Ohio State players. They trade in their jerseys, their things that their Big Ten championship rings that they can't sell. Trade them in for tattoos, money, etc. Then they lie about it. Then now it comes out. Oh wait, this is what happened. They get five games. Tell me the NCAA doesn't play a little bit of favorites with the teams that are travel wild. And I mean, you can just see that when in the Sugar Bowl. We're going to suspend you for five games starting next season, but we're not going to sit you down for this one game here at the end of this year. Kind of looking out for their own self-interest. Not really sure if you noticed the five-game suspension ends right before the start of the Big Ten play. You know, if Dez Bryant gets a year, then shouldn't other players who commit these violations and lie about it also get a year? AJ Green, Georgia, not as big a school as Ohio State, but a big name school, sold his jersey, 4-game suspension. I don't see how you can have one standard here for Dez Bryant, Oklahoma State, and then a different one for Georgia and Ohio State. Do I think it's like this all over in college athletics? I'm sure that if you really dove in and got into 90% of the schools, you would find issues like this. It doesn't sit well with me. I feel like if Dez Bryant got what he got, then shouldn't Ohio State get those five players get a year too? And then the question becomes, well, should they give back? Should they vacate their Big Ten championship? Look at what happened with USC. You know, Ohio State played this year the whole season with five guys who were technically ineligible because of what they did. USC plays a year with Reggie Bush, who's ineligible because of what he did. They give back their national championship. They get all these sanctions. Ohio State, are you going to let them keep their Big Ten championship? Does that sound fair to you? They played with five ineligible players. USC played with one ineligible player. I just don't like the double standard that they're creating. And I feel like because Ohio State travels well, and because Ohio State has this presence about them that they're the Ohio State, that the rules are different for them. Doesn't make sense to me. Just not a big fan. Notre Dame wide receiver Michael Floyd, big name receiver. A lot of people thought he might go pro. Decided he was going to come back. Ended up having a DUI, and they have suspended him. It'll be interesting to see the stance that Notre Dame takes. Are they going to treat this like, are they going to really lay down the hammer with him and set a standard, Brian Kelly, in his second year, about what is expected of their players and their conduct? Are they going to set him down for two games and then bring him back? It would make sense to me that he would sit 4 to 6 games. I know a lot of other programs don't do that. You can look at all over the place at other programs. I would not be shocked to see him miss two games and then have him be back. He might not miss any games. We'll see. This will say a lot about Coach Kelly and what his expectations are for his team and their actions, both on the field and off the field. And I'm anxious to see what ends up being happening. I know he said there's no timeline for his return or for the suspension. I think you have to give him 4 to 6 games. Suspension for this DUI that occurred. Because I think you need to send the message that I don't care if you're my star player. I don't care if you're my number one receiver. I don't care if you're the money maker. And look, it's not like Notre Dame plays an incredibly tough schedule. They can pick whoever they want. You know, they're going to go out and they're going to pick two or three games that are going to be tough, and then they're going to pick four or five games that are going to be mediocre teams, and then they're going to try and feed off the bottom feeders. They're going to try and take the lower tier teams, the teams that can't compete with them. So we'll see what kind of message they send out, and you can expect to hear more on that later on in the year as we find out more. Now, some interesting things going on in the NFL. They've ruled that there will be no third challenge. So if the coaches were to challenge a play, get it right, and challenge another play and get it right, they won't give them a third challenge. So you have two challenges, period, in a discussion now. And they've also gone to kicking off from the 35 and touchbacks going to the 25. Now, that being said, basically, if the ball touches the end zone, you just want to take the knee there and take the touchback. But doesn't that take away from the excitement of the game? If you're a Chicago Bears fan, don't you want Devin Hester returning kicks? I mean, I guarantee you the Packers and the Lions and the Vikings were lobbying for this rule change. Absolutely. That way you don't have to kick to them. Or the Seahawks with Leon Washington. Or any other team with a great return guy. Is that necessarily? I feel like that takes out the excitement from part of the game. Now, a lot of people think, well, special teams not that great. That's just where people get hurt. Yes, there are injuries on special teams. Yes, the league has been doing what they can to lessen those injuries. Sure, this is a step in the right direction. But if you're willing to make this step, then don't come tell me that we need 18 games. You need to just give that one up to the NFL. Just NFL, give that up. Don't tell me that we're concerned about player safety and that's why we're moving the kickoff, but we need an 18-game season to generate more revenue. Because if you care about the safety, if you really care about the safety of the players, why are you going to add two more games? These are the types of things that make me side on the players' side for these lockouts. Don't tell me one thing and then show me another. Don't say safety is so important that we should tack on a couple more games. Because that's not hypocrisy. Just it doesn't do anything for me. I don't care to hear about it. I'm not impressed with your concern for safety if that's what you're going to do. We'll see as the dealings proceed. I know there's upcoming legal action that will be taken. We'll have more information for you on that as soon as it's available. Let's turn now to our NASCAR insider. We're going to talk with him for a couple minutes on what's going on this week, the AutoCare 400. Jeremy, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Gary.
Well, tell us what to expect this weekend in at the AutoCare 400.
Well, it's going to be some of the same old news, and it's going to be a little bit of new news. This weekend, I would not be surprised if Jimmy Johnson gets his first victory of the season. He had a third-place finish at Bristol this past week, and he's always running well in California. He'll probably end up finishing top five at the very least.
All right. Who else should we be watching for on this track?
Well, this weekend I will be looking for Carl Edwards mostly. And the reason I bring that up is because Jimmy Johnson and Carl Edwards, they've had quite a few 1-2 finishes. And Carl Edwards is on a big momentum swing. Do not be surprised if this is one of the best finishes you see all year.
Well, give me some thoughts you have on the last race there at Bristol. What happened? What surprised you? What didn't? What do you think after seeing that one?
I was kind of surprised that Kyle Busch won. I really didn't think he was going to win.
He had a clean sweep, didn't he?
What's that?
He had a clean sweep on the weekend, didn't he?
Yes, he did. He also, which is pretty impressive, he led his 10,000th lead lap or he led his 10,000th lap in the Nationwide Series, which nobody's ever done. The closest person to that was Mark Martin, and Mark Martin had somewhere like 7,500, I do believe.
Nice. Well, what else surprised you besides Kyle Busch winning it?
You know, the only other thing that really surprised me is how poorly Tony Stewart finished. He finished 19th, and he was, I really thought that he would have had a stronger run, which he was, you know, most people were expecting to at Bristol, but he didn't finish well this weekend. Do not be surprised if you see a big comeback from him this weekend. I say he finishes top five. A couple other guys to look out for this weekend. Mark Martin is definitely one to watch for. He's had a pretty good record at this track. Jeff Gordon, California native, he's looking to win this race pretty big. Do not be surprised if he's to be the first two-time winner this year. And other than that, the only other big surprise to me this year so far and possibly this weekend is Paul Menard. He's fifth in points right now, and it's unbelievable that he's ran as good as he has this year.
You still standing by your season predictions thus far?
Oh, definitely. I'm definitely standing behind them. Tony Stewart this year is not necessarily his strongest part of the year. I look for him to really start turning things up come about middle of May, early part of June, somewhere in there. It seems like that time of the year, he just really steps it up every year. And Carl Edwards, as far as being a big-time contender, he's really, how can you not argue right now that Carl Edwards is a clear front runner?
Yeah, he's racing about as good as anybody. Well,
oh, yes, that's for sure.
Well, thanks for joining us, Jeremy. Glad to have you on again, and we'll look forward to talking to you next week.
Thank you, Gary, and I'll talk to you next week.
Major League Baseball opening day is just a few days away, March 31st. That's 1 week. I don't know if you've seen the commercials for opening day, but they're pretty good. You see the team banners with 162-0. Brian Wilson, where they talk about Santa Claus comes, but he's wearing a black beard, and they show Brian Wilson, the package especially wrapped, and it's a fastball that's flaming, and he says, I wrapped this one just for you or something. Pretty good if you should look out for him. I remember back in, it must have been in the early 90s when Ken Griffey Jr. was still breaking in. They've always had great opening day commercials, the Major League Baseball has. And they had a part of Casey at the bat playing, and they were showing clips, blah, 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 and it goes to the end. For there is no joy in Mudville, for Mighty Casey has struck out. And it shows a clip of Ken Griffey Jr. hitting home run, and they say, maybe they should have traded him for Griffey. I always enjoyed that one, too. Opening day is like, it's like, you can't really call it a man's holiday. It's not like the Super Bowl. There's not going to be big parties everywhere. There's not going to be tremendous fanfare for it. But opening day is one of the greatest days in all of America, because on opening day everybody has the same chance to make it to the World Series, and anything can happen. Everyone wants to talk about the Yankees are done for, they got no pitching, the Red Sox is stacked up, the Orioles, they're garbage. Well, the Orioles also went out and got Mark Reynolds, they have Derek Lee, they have Buck Showalter leading them now. Oh, the Phillies are untouchable, they have four aces. Well, look at what happened with Miami with the Heat when they brought in their big three guys. Will the Phillies be able to live up to that expectation? You know, everyone has their own preconceived notions about what's happening, but everybody's chances are all the same. It's going to be an interesting season. I'm really looking forward to what's going on. You'll want to stay tuned. We're going to have a lot of predictions for you, and coming out next week, we'll have before opening day, I'll give you my predictions for the season as well as the rest of the team. Doug Shockey and Mike Giannone and a couple other guys are going to give us their thoughts on who's going to win the divisions, who's going to make it to the World Series and win the World Series, MVP, Cy Young, etc. We'll give you some things to watch for. It should be interesting to see how it all plays out. Should be a lot of fun. Nothing like baseball season. It's great time. It's going to be it'll be entertaining. Make sure you make sure you don't miss opening day and all the festivities. Great flyovers. Great, one of the greatest days in all of America. Right up there with the Super Bowl, March Madness. That's above March Madness. Well, that's my opinion. Maybe that'll be a poll question for us. What's a bigger game? Opening day, World Series, that sort of thing. Well, that's pretty much going to wrap it up for us here. Next week will be a we'll have a lot on baseball's Major League Baseball predictions. We're going to have some tournament reviews, and we'll be talking about as we head into the final stages of the tournament. NBA playoffs will be coming up a little closer. We'll have a little information on that. Make sure you check back with us beginning of next week. We'll have more great sports talk coming for you. If you have anything for us, make sure you hit us up on Twitter at It's Good With Gary. Check out the blog site, www.itsgoodwithgary.blogspot.com. Follow us on iTunes. Hit up the Facebook fan page, It's Good With Gary on Facebook. Thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you later.
Opening day. It's when the new year really begins. This isn't Flag Day. This is ridiculously huge Flag Day. It's more presidential than President's Day. This is the day that fathers wish was their day. This is Christmas, but Santa has a black beard and delivers presents nobody wants.
I wrapped it myself.
On baseball's biggest stage, this is the anniversary no one ever forgets.
Opening day, March 31st on ESPN. Telecast presented by Dick's Sporting Goods.